Come on.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to a very special episode of the Check Engine Podcast. Nick and Tristan are here, two of your three regular hosts, but it's okay because we have an awesome guest with us tonight. Normally, we do these big grand intros where we spend probably 2 minutes just introing the person before they actually get a chance to speak. And I don't think we're going to do that this time, not because he doesn't deserve it, but because really the only word that really sums him up is badass. If you've watched anything in IMSA lately, you've probably seen him on track. He's actually leading the IMSA GTD points with two rounds to go here in 2022. He's won championships in Trans Am. He's been a road course ringer in various NASCAR series. He has driven the Pikes Peak Hill Climb, won it in class. He has driven the Baja 1000. I don't know if there's anything he hasn't driven yet, but we're going to ask him. Please welcome Mike Skeen. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm glad we ran into each other at Road America a couple weeks ago.
Completely by chance.
Yeah.
Through your better half.
That's right. Yep.
So we appreciate you jumping on. I think we didn't run into you, unfortunately, this last weekend. You were back up at Road America. And you've been in Wisconsin twice in the past month, and you said you're drinking an old fashioned tonight. I am having a Wisconsin beer. You're not having a Wisconsin version of an old fashioned though, are you?
Probably not. I don't know specifically what that entails, but this is just the home version.
It doesn't have brandy in it?
No.
Got it. Yeah. So that is
a thing actually.
Yeah. Yeah. If you, yeah, Wisconsin old fashions are usually like brandy, and they're very, very sweet with muddled fruit and a whole bunch of other stuff in it. Okay. 7-Up, yeah. I think, goes in there.
Depends on if you want sour or sweet. But
yeah.
Well, I'm Southern, so I like sweet stuff too. That's always good. Funny because I used to coach a little bit with Natalie Decker, and her parents are, you know, her family are from up there, and so you know, usually we'd end up hanging out in the family RV or whatever in the evenings and had a few of their homemade old fashions, which I don't think had brandy in them, but maybe they just improvised since they were on the road or whatever. But they were delicious.
Yeah. That's actually, old fashions, I think, are quite controversial, at least when you get out of Wisconsin. I went into a speakeasy once in Nevada, in Vegas, and there's a whole old fashioned menu. And the guy asked where I was from, and I said Wisconsin. And he's like, "You guys don't make them right." Like he was very, very upset at brandy old fashions. But anyway, we appreciate you being on. You've been, like I said, been up to Road America twice in the last 3 weeks. This past weekend, not really what you wanted. It was a new team, right? A debut race for you guys.
Yeah, it was kind of a late thing coming together and not a group that I'd worked with before. It was a young kid that I was co-driving with from Oklahoma in a BMW M4 GT4 that they had picked up. And he's done some club racing and SCCA and Spec Miatas and stuff. And then they got this M4 and they're trying to move him up the ranks. And so I got in touch through Louis Gelati, who's involved in kind of running the program. And so this was the first time I'd worked with him. And the kid's really good, really, you know, it's got good speed. But just, you know, new team jitters and stuff. We kind of missed a couple of things in the weekend early on that hurt us a little bit. And then he had a wreck, which ended our weekend a little bit early, unfortunately. But yeah, hopefully I'll be back with them and we'll try to rebound on that one.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's always tough when you've got, you missed time and that kind of thing, I would imagine. You know, missed steps in the process. Always throw me off.
Yeah, and, you know, first time you're working together with a crew and, you know, another driver and stuff like that, it's not a guy that I've worked with coaching before, you know, usually in these pro-am pairings, it's kind of a guy that you've brought up the ladder a little bit and you've worked with him at test days and stuff. But this was the first time I'd met him at the event. And so just, you know, finding our feet and working together and figuring out all those little details just take a little bit of time. And so, yeah, overall, it was, I think, a promising weekend. Like, we showed some pretty good pace and practice and stuff. And so even though we didn't get a result necessarily, it was good to work with them, and hopefully we can make it better down the road.
So how do you accelerate that timeline if it's someone that, like, you've never worked with before? You mentioned normally you've tested with them or stuff like that, but when it's like you show up on a Thursday night or a Friday and you're shaking hands for the first time, you know, how do you set those expectations, or I guess coach in that short window if you even can?
Yeah, you know, obviously the more communication you can have before the weekend, the better, even if you haven't worked together, just kind of getting a feel for goals for the weekend and understanding like where that person's at in their progression and what they want out of the weekend is, you know, a big difference. You know, if it's a guy that doesn't really care about result too much, he's just trying to check a bucket list item off and just wants to show up and do decent, that's a lot different than that, you know, like a young kid that's trying to progress up the ladder and wants to show well in the first weekend and stuff. So kind of understand where they're at, what their experience is with that car and track, and knowing how to kind of get off the ground running is important. And just, you know, establishing what everybody, you know, the crew included, wants out of the weekend is a big deal. And, you know, in an SRO weekend, when you only have a couple practices and you got to share that time between the two drivers, you know, I'm comfortable there. I've been there, you know, I was just there 2 weeks before in a different GT4. So I don't need a lot of time. It's about getting him comfortable in the car, getting him comfortable with the race group and how, you know, the other drivers work and stuff. And so it's, yeah, I mean, it's just setting up ahead of the weekend what your goals and plans are and trying to stick to that and kind of keep your, you know, that in your mind, even though, like, we all want to do well, we want to win races and be on the podium and stuff, but sometimes you got to set like a sub tier goal or whatever of what you're really trying to accomplish.
You mentioned you were just there in another GT4. How well do those experiences translate? Like, if you're in one class of car, is it just like, hey, I find time a little bit differently, but otherwise it's pretty much the same? Or is it just because you're familiar with both kinds of GT4 cars, you've already driven those cars before and you've driven the track before and you kind of put it together? Or is it just like, hey, this is basically kind of the same because they try to standardize the class a little bit?
Yeah, even though the models are different, you know, so I was in an AMG GT4 for the IMSA weekend, obviously a bit different, probably kind of the extremes of the GT4 category, really, the AMG and the BMW. But they, you know, the brake points are still similar, downforce level is still similar, power level is still similar. So a lot of that is, you know, like, you know, I know the track and where I'm braking and that sort of stuff to a degree. You know, there might be some fine polishing on what the different cars want a little bit. But more than anything, probably is just figuring out the different tires. So the Michelin versus the Pirelli is a pretty big difference. How it peaks, you know, for qualifying on a sticker run, how it, you know, plateaus and lasts through a race and stuff like that. And then just, you know, also kind of set up differences, you know, just between the two and different teams and stuff, and figuring out kind of what to work on first and where your baseline's at and stuff like that. But, you know, it's a track that I've been to a lot in a lot of different cars, but also a fair amount in a GT4 car. And so it's pretty easy to just jump in and be 95% to the pace.
Pretty easy for someone like you. Yes. What piqued my interest on that last answer is you mentioned the AMG and the BMW being kind of the extremes when it comes to like differences in GT4. That surprises me, because if for someone like me from the outside looking in, they're both front engine, rear wheel drive, you know, that the configuration is relatively the same. Like, what makes the BMW so different from the AMG?
Where their strengths and weaknesses are. So pretty much, you know, no matter which series you're in, how the BOP plays out, like the AMG is going to be one of the slower cars in a straight line because it's really good braking and cornering. The BMW is going to be one of the faster cars in a straight line because it's a little taller CG. It's not quite as good in the corners. So, you know, you end up racing them very differently. and they make their pace in very different ways, and you know their strengths are in different places. So you know, even like you know the Mercedes and the Cayman, maybe you know they're very different in terms of platform with the mid-engine versus front engine and all, but they may be closer in how they handle than the BMW because it's taller and bigger and heavier, and you know, it just has different strengths and how it gets around the track. So I think, you know, they're just, even though they're similar platforms in terms of front engine, rear wheel drive, they're very, very different to drive.
I think as a fan, that's what makes, whether you look at SRO in the GT4 or GT3 spec, IMSA, Pilot Challenge, or the big series, when you get into these sports cars, I know people, you know, have their opinions on what balance of performance and all that kind of stuff. But as a fan, like, you see all these different marks that you can immediately tell the difference between, and they make very similar lap time in very different ways, which makes like just following a lap super entertaining, because you can almost anticipate, you know, okay, you know, Mike's going to pull him up the straightaway here because this thing's a rocket down the straightaway. But now you get into the technical stuff and that person's going to close right back in. Can they take advantage? And like just that kind of chess game that goes on. And you guys as drivers obviously kind of know which ones are better where, and you can kind of plan out passes or how you manage a race based on that, right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it plays a big difference in how the tires degrade and stuff like that. And, you know, which cars, you know, where the weight is and what, you know, how they put down power and stuff makes a big difference. And I think that's even more true in the GT4 cars compared to the GT3s, because they're a little bit closer to the street car. So they have a little bit more of that inherent characteristic from the street car. Whereas once you get to the GT3 level, that waters down a little bit more towards race car, and, you know, everything gets even a little bit more close. So even the, you know, front end, like in the GT3 Mercedes, it's 52% rear weight, because the engine's so far back, you have a transaxle in the back. So even though it's front engine, it's 52% rear weight, because that's what you want for the handling. And so it, all the cars are like that, where they start to get a little bit more similar, just because of what the ultimate performance goal is.
But that hood is a mile long.
Yeah, well, that's because the whole engine is behind the center axle of the front axle. And then, you know, like a Corvette, you got a torque tube to the back with a transaxle, so you got quite a bit of mass in the back there.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, driver's basically sitting on the back wheel and the fuel cell's back there. So
It's the Mercedes guys. They know what they're doing.
I mean, everybody now, you know, all the customer programs that are designing cars, they know what they're doing. There's a lot of evolution now that's come into where we're at, and, you know, several models into these GT programs. They're pretty well dialed.
So you bring up GT3. That's a good transition point. You know, we're interviewing you the week of the VIR IMSA event, which is the second to last race of the year. And you and your teammate leading the GTD points, a consistent year. You haven't necessarily had the peak of the top step yet, but you're always there. And with a team that they may have been around a while in like club racing and regional stuff, but a team that's relatively new to the IMSA ranks, at least that I've seen. One, how did you guys get so competitive so quickly? And
ask him to share his secrets, man. Come on.
Yeah, is your mindset now going into essentially a championship run here with two races left? Like, are you adjusting at all, or is it still just 100% go?
Yeah, I think the focus is still the same. I mean, you know, it's frustrating that we haven't got the win yet, and for sure we'd love to have one. And, you know, I think VIR for me would be an awesome place to do it since it's kind of the home track. But you know, the last two races for sure at Lime Rock and Road America, we were in contention for a win, should have had a strong podium at least, and just caught yellows wrong or whatever, you know, had some bad luck that didn't fall our way. And so, you know, the performance has been there, and, you know, you can argue that maybe we should have had more podiums or some stronger finishes in there. But, you know, we have had that consistency that's kept us up at the top of the points table, which is important. But it's always nice to get trophies too. So For me, this weekend would be awesome to go and get that. Not just a home track, but one of my favorites on the calendar just because it's so fun. But would love to go secure that and give us a little bit of a buffer going into Petite, because a lot of things can happen there with prototypes trying to pass in S's and stuff. You never know when you might be a bumper car for one of them. And so we'd like to have a little bit more of a safety margin if we could. But you know, there's a lot of really good cars in GTD that are right there nipping at our heels and have been, the last several races. So it's going to be tough for sure.
You mentioned VIR was your home track. I had assumed that based on what I had seen in the background there. This isn't true for you. So I guess we don't race there, but we consider Road America our home track, but he does. So I can't say that. We always like to hear how it compares, for everyone's favorite. You always hear the boilerplate whenever IMSA's at Road America about, oh, this is a great track and people love it. And, it's kind of like the, hello, fill in the blank city at a rock concert. It's kind of hard to believe. So I always personally like to get the opinions of anybody we have racing, as do, how Road America stands up to their favorite track if it isn't. You mentioned that, VIR is probably yours, and I think that's entirely fair. Having been there and having it probably be your local track, I don't think I don't think we can take that too personally, but how does Road America stack up to VIR?
Road America is definitely high on the list. And for me also, like, the whole weekend as a whole is always fun there because the Elkhart Lake's fun and, it's got so much history there. And the environment is really cool. There's always a ton of fans, which is a good time. And it makes for good racing. To me, it's not the most complicated track because it's a lot of, straights, 90 degree corners. So it's not the most technical, although then you have the carousel and the kink, which kind of makes up for a lot of that lack of, you got these big ballsy corners that you really got to commit to. And, so that separates and adds enough level of difficulty that you can kind of separate yourself as a driver compared to other people. And like I said, those big straights and braking zones make for really good racing, which I think is something that lacks at VIR. It's a track, that I love driving the lap. It's really technical, got great elevation changes in good places and stuff. There's a lot of really subtle trickiness to it, but it's a tough place to pass. So the racing kind of can tend to train out a little bit and just, be a follow the leader kind of thing until somebody makes a mistake, which is a tough, thing to deal with. But, I would say those are kind of the two on the top of my list on the IMSA schedule, at least, maybe add in Motorsport, even though we didn't go there this year for Korthoff.
So we've been to Motorsport, we've been to VAR. VAR was actually the genesis of this podcast.
It was,
We actually came up with the idea on the 14-hour road trip back to Wisconsin from the IMSA weekend at VR. So it holds a special place in our hearts.
Sure.
So does Biscuitville.
Yeah.
That's actually the part where the heart has a little bit of scarring. That's Biscuitville.
Do you go to Biscuitville? What's your go-to order at Biscuitville?
No, actually, I'm not sure that I've ever been to a Biscuitville, to be quite honest. In Charlotte, it's Bojangles would be the place to go.
Yes.
Charlotte, it's the home of Bojangles. The first one's like maybe 5 miles from here, which is also not a place I frequent a lot. But
you've got to stay in better shape than we do.
Yeah,
so I understand.
If you're eating Biscuitville or Bojangles very frequently, it's going to show.
That's awesome. So you mentioned VAR being your home track, and you, Roebling Road, Road Atlanta, like all of those places down there. Let's kind of go back a little bit. How did you get started in karting, in racing in general? Was it something that, hey, like, let's just go check it out and see if we like it? Or were you always like a diehard race fan and wanting to get into driving, or how did that come about?
Yeah. So, my dad was always a car guy, like a race fan, kind of a BMW guy mostly. He had a BMW 2002 and like a 6 Series back in the 80s. And, he was going to build a 2002 autocross car. He was in the Navy. We were living in Virginia. And then we moved to North Carolina and he met these guys that were doing the go-kart racing. And so he started doing that before I was old enough to do it. And so I was following him to the track and, we were like renting a pop-up camper from the Navy and putting the go-kart on the roof of the pop-up camper and going to the racetrack for the weekend.
There you go, Nick. Bear that in mind if your cart trailer ever gives me any trouble.
That's right. Yeah.
I can borrow your pop-up.
Yeah.
And towing it
behind a 240D Mercedes. It was real classy.
Oh, nice.
And so anyway, a couple years of that and going to the track with him and then like driving his cart around the neighborhood and stuff. And I had a yard cart from when I was pretty little. And so just always loved, motorsports, driving, anything I could get in, had a Power Wheels Jeep that I was all about, that all just snowballed. And then when I was 10, we started doing some local level karting at Langley Speedway in Virginia. And then we moved back again to North Carolina about the time VIR was getting renovated and reopening. And so I, would go up there, watch. I remember going and watching Trans Am, watching, Grand Am back in the day, and then started doing some track days as soon as I was old enough to get a license, and got into NASA Spec E30, built myself a little E30 BMW to run that. Met bunch of people through that, and also did a show on Speed about the same time, a couple years into that, which got me a lot of exposure, and met a guy that wanted me to race his car. That was when Trans Am was just coming back again, in like 2008 or 9 maybe. So drove that was kind of my first big thing, big car. Like I went from a 150 horsepower Spec E30 to a 850 horsepower two-frame Corvette Trans Am car.
And just a little jump.
And then had a really good showing in my first race at Road Atlanta in that series. And that really, I think, started the ball rolling for me kind of down the pro, avenue, where I started meeting some guys and getting rides in bigger cars and leading to world challenge and stuff like that.
So I don't want to bogart this whole thing. Tristan, I know you've got questions too, but
you probably have better questions. Let's be honest.
But I've got two follow-ups for that. I read about the show setup. I was an avid Speed.
Sorry, my watch is trying to interrupt us.
Happens to me literally all the time.
That's okay. We're leaving this in. That's good content.
All good.
If she didn't catch that, I said I was a Speed nut when that channel was on. I cannot remember that show setup for whatever reason. So how did you get on the show and like, what was that experience like?
Yeah. So, there were two seasons. The first season, they were like yellow Pontiac Solstices. I watched that. There were a couple guys names that you would even recognize now still in the pro world, that were in that first series. And I was just a big fan. So I applied online, to do the second season and didn't hear anything for months. I think it aired in the spring, didn't hear anything over the summer. I thought, whatever, didn't make it. And then I got a call like maybe early October or something or late September. And they were like, can you, be out in LA in a week with somebody that can spend a whole month with you to shoot this thing? I'm like, holy shit. Like, how do I come up with it? So fortunately, made all that happen, found a good buddy of mine, Ryan Brenneman, that was able to, he's kind of self-employed, could take the time off and go out there and be my crew guy. And so we go out there with really no idea what we're doing, and show up with, like 100 other people that are trying to do the same thing. And they do this little karting runoff and select, I think, 30 or 40 people that are going to make the first episode of the show at least. And then they select like 24 to be in the cars for the most of the season, and they just kind of eliminate as you go. And so, it was pretty cool. Still a couple of guys from that season too, that I was on, Chris Pry and some others that were, still went on and did a little bit of pro racing stuff. And, it was a lot of fun. It was basically a month of work on a car, race a car, work on a car, race a car every other day. So it was a lot of seat time and camera time, and it was a cool experience.
So how do you ask somebody, hey, just take a month from whatever you're doing starting next week? Like, do you have like a Rolodex of, like, do you go through your phone? And you're like, okay, that person, no, that's not going to do it. Like, How does that happen?
Basically just thinking through all the crazy car idiots that I know, like who has, you know, their own job or no job or whatever that can, you know, just go and be a hooligan for a month. And, you know, we didn't know if it was going to be a weekend or a month at the start of it. Didn't know if I was going to make anything, but, yeah, it was really cool. From the BMW stuff ahead of time, like I had messaged a bunch of friends that were out there, or friends of friends, looking for a car. So I didn't have to rent a car for a month out there. And some guy lent me a 745 BMW, which is like the old 80s turbo.
Yeah.
And we 5-speed swapped it. And so that was our rental car for the month. And it was just, you know, a fun experience. We, got to spend a lot of time out there in LA and mostly at, streets of Willow and Horse Thief Mile and stuff at Willow Springs, but it was a good time.
That's awesome. Tristan, I'm going to step back for a second, 'cause I could just go all night.
Well, I don't have a slick segue for this one, but it's probably, the most pressing question, that I have. And I'll follow up with the second one. I'm probably like asking you to pick your favorite child, or you can't answer this because it's some kind of contractual thing, but what is your favorite series to race in? Because we know we've got our favorites to watch and our listeners all have their favorites. And, you know, it's interesting usually when we're talking to you race folks, which one of your favorite series. It's often unexpected, or at least the reason why is unexpected. So I love that question. As soon as I saw the giant menu you had to choose from, I knew I had to ask that question.
Yeah, I mean, that's a super difficult question to answer. I guess I would say of the things that I'm racing this year, so IMSA, SRO, TA, probably the TA2 car is kind of my most enjoyable because the racing is so tight. The cars are a blast to drive. There's no driver nannies or anything. It's a H pattern gearbox. They're kind of in between GT3, GT4 speed. So pretty quick car, very simple car, but also like you can race really close because they're cheaper than GT4s and GT3 cars. And they're not made of all carbon fiber and stuff. So, you know, it's not $100,000 if you knock a dive plane off. And, they make for some great racing. And so, I really like that series. Unfortunately it's only part-time for me this year, doing like 6 races, I think, over there, but, it's a blast to drive. And then, looking broader, I would say it's kind of like the events that I do just here and there. Like it's so fun to do the Xfinity or, you know, NASCAR road races. That's a freaking blast. It's kind of the same thing, you know, TA2 on steroids. And then, like Pikes Peak is so freaking fun. Baja was a blast. You know, that stuff that I don't get to do all the time is what I would love to do more of, but it's just hard to put together.
I don't know where to go from there, 'cause there's so many things I want to touch on.
Like, go for it, Nick.
Okay. So let's start with Trans Am, 'cause that was the first thing you mentioned. I don't think there's a lot of people who listen to us that are really familiar with Trans Am and what a beast of a car those things actually are. Like, and you mentioned it, right? You jumped from a 150 horsepower M30 to an 850 horsepower Trans Am car with an H pattern shifter. Like, just, can you describe to, like, and this is an audio medium, and I know you have a YouTube channel where you've got onboards and all that cool shit, but, like, can you describe to someone what it is like to sit in a Trans Am car and just rocket one of those things around?
So the TA car specifically, which is different, the TA2 is what I'm racing this year, which is right, more like the slower spec version, but it's still fast. The TA version is more like GT3 speed in terms of lap time, except that it's all straight line. you know, the brake zones are way earlier. You know, the corner speeds are not as high as a GT3, but the top speeds at, like, you know, Road America, VIR, Road Atlanta, any of the big tracks, is going to be like 185, 190 in the strong car.
Jesus.
And sometimes higher than that at Daytona. All, you know, they're 207, 210 going into turn one. So you don't get that kind of acceleration in anything else, even a cup NASCAR, you know, this time, you know, this period of time. So, you know, they're the definitely the highest horsepower road course car you can get in, other than like some crazy time attack, you know, whatever that'll last a lap. But it was the first car that I remember looking at the data and seeing like, you know, 0.7, 0.8 G of acceleration, straight line acceleration at the end of the straightaway. That's like what you get in second or third gear out of, you know, slow corners in like a GT3 car. And it just keeps pulling all the way down the straightaway. And, you know, when I ran them at Road America, I remember specifically looking back at one of my videos, drafting a guy up the front straightaway, and, you know, he's over blocking by the pit wall. So we're inches from the pit wall going up across start finish, and you can't see the banners on the side because they're blurring by so fast, you know, at the end of the straightaway. It's just hard to describe that kind of speed. And then also the challenge of like, how do you stop that thing? Because it's got smaller brakes, it's got less downforce. You know, it's just a huge challenge, which I like. I think that's what's lacking a lot now in all the new cars, is they're just too easy to drive with all the nannies and the slower speeds. Like, you can get in and, you know, a lot of people can get within 90%, you know, with a little bit of practice. And it's really hard to do that in a TA car or something. So it makes you like do everything right, you know, more so than the new stuff.
To that point, though, about the new cars being easier to drive or easier to get in the window, I mean, it's a lot of it is targeted towards those bronze drivers, right, that are going to be bringing most of the funding. Am I right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it also is, you know, more appealing to teams because they're easier cars to run. And, you know, there's a lot of advantages to those cars. But, you know, to me, the thrill of driving a TA car or even a TA2 car is pretty high. And even for the bronze guys, I mean, there's a lot of gentleman driver guys that are running in TA. And, you know, maybe they can't get 100% of that monster, but still the thrill of driving that thing at 90% is pretty freaking high, you know? So
yeah,
I think even, you know, there's a lot of appeal even to those guys to me.
Tristan, got anything? I could keep going.
No, I mean, I don't want to interrupt your flow on that one, 'cause my next question is kind of unrelated to that. So if you've got more questions about that, the answer that I kicked off, by all means, keep it rolling.
No, my next thing, what you mentioned NASCAR, and I just wanted, like, you've been brought into different, you know, as like the road course ringer, as it were. And like, is that people reaching out to you, or are you reaching out to teams saying, hey, if you need a guy, I'm your guy?
It's a little bit of both. So, you know, so it's something that I really enjoy. So it's something that I do pursue a little bit, but it also depends on what my schedule is like that year or whatever, and whether I can really spend the time to pursue it, because it's something that does take a lot of effort to put together. And, especially now that the road courses are becoming more important, especially in Xfinity, where they've got a bunch of those in a year. Now they're putting a lot more effort into that, and they do have to do it well to stay in the points and stuff like that. So, you know, it's something those guys are doing a lot better. It's harder to go in as a ringer and just one off do really well with a backmarker team or something. So you still have to find a good team to be able to do it. And a lot of those have full-time drivers. So the window is getting smaller and smaller for IMSA guys or whatever to go over and try to find those rides for one-off weekends. But it's something that's a lot of fun to do. And, you know, something I'll certainly keep doing on the side as I can.
All right, go ahead, Tristan.
All right. So the, you know, among the things that you've listed is, you know, some of your favorites, which was a surprise because I had questions about them, and a pleasant surprise, was, so you've got kind of, you know, you've got TA, you've got World Challenge, you've got IMSA, you've got even, you know, NASCAR road course stuff, karting. It's all kind of different flavors of the same ice cream, where you've got, you know, it's all road course, you know, car stuff for the most part. And then you've got Baja. How did that happen? It feels in my gut like there's a story there. You can tell me, nope, I just did it once and there wasn't a story, but I feel like there's got to be a story about how you got roped into that and then loved it.
Yeah, a little bit of a story. So when I was running World Challenge from like 2010 to 15, I think it was basically with the same sponsor, Carlisle Companies. They had a couple different brands like Hawk Performance and Krager Wheels and stuff that were on the car at various times. But they also had a business with doing like ATV tires, UTV tires, stuff like that. And did a lot of business with some of the guys that were selling Baja parts and, you know, supporting a lot of these teams and stuff. And fortunately for me, some of the CEO and some of those guys were really into the Baja stuff and had gone down a couple of times and run it. And so I got the invite and was, you know, just jumped all over it. It looked like a blast. And we went down there and I've done it twice. The first year we did it, was in a class one buggy, which is like the big buggy, you know, the LS in the rear and sequential and stuff, pretty legit thing. And it, you know, it's totally rad to drive, but also like you're going up against these big, like well prepped teams and, you know, you gotta be spending $1 million to do it really well. And these guys are doing it every year. And so
Jesus,
I knew we were just going to do it and have fun. And we did, we had a blast, but weren't super competitive. And then the year after that, they were like, all right, we want to go like try to win something. And so we moved to class 18, which is, or was, I think at the time, an unlimited UTV side by side. And so you could, you know, you had to use the engine and drivetrain basically, but you could build anything you wanted around it. So they had this tube frame buggy with, you know, much bigger tires and travel and stuff. And it was, you know, pretty big overdog car for the class, to be honest. But, we went out there and won it and it was awesome. A little bit, you know, a lot different to drive, honestly, because it had, you know, much less travel to the class one car and stuff. And so the really big whoops, like, you know, you see on the highlights with the trophy trucks going over 100 miles an hour, like those things are 3 feet tall and 10 feet apart and stuff. And so you got to have a big rig to be blasting over those. And so in the short wheelbase, smaller buggy, you know, you're just like bouncing over these things. And, so it was a more drawn out process. The average speed's a little bit lower, but it was a blast to be in something that we could be competitive with and race for the win in.
So what like skills from road racing, pavement road racing, could you take with you that applied to a Baja buggy? And also, did you wear a mouth guard for those whoops?
No mouth guard, but fortunately, you know, pretty good suspension, but still pretty rough. As far as skill stuff, I mean, you know, all the car control stuff is the same. It just, it happens lazier. You know, you're like, the things move slower, but moves more, you know, you get more yaw and stuff, you know, more sliding around. I think the biggest thing to figure out is like how to take jumps and how to use the braking. Because, you know, you get so much dive, so much rearward, you know, squat when you get on the gas and stuff. Like there's a lot of vertical movement in the suspension, obviously. And so figuring out like, all right, I got to brake before this obstacle because I got to be on the gas whenever I go over, you know, anything basically. Because you can't be braking into like a whooped up turn or whatever. You know, you've got to like brake kind of ahead and then gas it up a little bit through the corner so that the suspension is up and free and can kind of absorb that, you know, stuff that you're trying to get over. And so all that kind of stuff is a lot different, obviously, but like all the vision stuff, looking ahead, planning lines, like all that still applies. And honestly, like I apply, you know, or would say it's a lot similar to, you know, mountain biking, which I do a lot too. Like it's picking lines over obstacles when you've got several different places you can go with it and kind of, you know, picking what the least worst obstacle is to hit, you know.
Least worst. So is just in general, is that kind of, you know, the vision and the things you mentioned about, you know, the things that kind of hold over, is that how you can just adapt to so many categories so quickly? Like you can jump from a GT4 to a Trans Am to a GT3 to a cup car to a Baja buggy because you know these one, two, or three things will always hold true no matter what you're strapped into?
Yeah, I think that practice, you know, the seat time with a bunch of different platforms is extremely helpful in it. You know, it's something that I didn't necessarily try to accomplish, but it's kind of lucked into by coaching a lot of people early on and getting in a bunch of different cars. And, you know, I did, you know, a few different programs with different track day groups and stuff where I'd like just jump in a car, do a data lap and come in and jump in another car and do a data lap. And so like I would end up sitting in a bunch of different cars in one day and try to, you know, maximize the performance in three laps or whatever. And so that practice, even though I wasn't really trying to accomplish anything specifically other than make a buck and make rent or whatever, was, you know, good practice for learning how to manage different platforms and stuff. And so, you know, yeah, the physics is all the same essentially. You know, there might be more movement in a stock Corvette versus, you know, a spec Miata or whatever, but like it's really just managing what does it want for inputs to get the same result, you know?
Got it.
Makes a lot of sense when he says it. I bet it's harder than that.
So, yes, it's always harder than it looks, I'm sure, Tristan. Go ahead, Tristan. What else you got?
For me, I was raised, I know you mentioned like your dad was, you know, BMW guy. And for me, it was always Audi Volkswagen guy was my dad. That's how I got, you know, my start in cars was he told me, hey, the R8 race car is coming to our local Audi dealer. You know, you want to go look at it. And immediately was like, this is the best thing ever. I had never been into cars before that. I'd never been to racing before that. I like Nick was always like, oh, I've got this, you know, thing I got in a cereal box. It's a race car. Give it to Nick, you know, whatever it is. Like, cause he was always a racing guy. But I, you know, I saw the R8 race car and was like, hey, this is actually really cool. We got to go see him at Road America that next weekend. And enough about me, but the Audi, I was always the Audi guy. And so you know, I've got, you know, computer desktop background images of the, you know, 80s Audis ripping up Pike's Peak and that kind of thing. So that's always been something that I've been curious how that's different, or given your answer so far, actually similar to a lot of other racing. You know, it's something that it kind of sticks out as the idea of a hill climb isn't necessarily, you know, super unique. They do them all over the world, but you know, Pike's Peak always sticks out as kind of like the hill climb. And I'm curious what your experiences were like with that. It's a bit open-ended question. It's just something that I've always been curious what it's like, because it's something that sticks out in any Audi fan's mind is Pike's Peak.
Yeah, Pike's Peak is awesome. And, you know, it's something that, you know, sure, you know, as a kid, like I'd see videos here or there or something, but like that content is harder to stumble upon. Like you have to kind of look for it, you know. Yep. Now it's a little bit more available because, you know, it's just easier to, you know, and everybody's posting onboard videos and stuff. But, you know, it wasn't really televised well, or you like, you might get clips of highlights on, you know, whatever like recap show or something, but, you know, it was harder to like be a fan of it. So it wasn't like big on my radar. It was, you know, definitely interested in it. I thought it was really cool when I saw it, but it was another one of those things kind of like Baja where I sort of stumbled into it because a sponsor was doing this and then said, oh, why don't we go do that? And I was like, hell yeah, I'll do that. And so, you know, learned a lot just trial by fire in my first year doing it. And it's just such an incredible event because it is so unique. And yeah, there are a lot of hill climbs, but I don't think there's any other hill climbs where a fast car takes 10 minutes to go up. Right. Like that's a pretty long one. And so just the sheer size of it all and like all that and the logistics of getting trucks up there and like all the other stuff that goes with it is very unique. And then, you know, the length of it, like even though it's a 10 minute run, it's like an endurance event because you're there all week and you practice from like, you know, 6 a.m. to or 5 a.m. or, you know, whenever sun up is to 9 a.m. because you have to get back off the mountain so they can open up for fan, you know, like regular tourists and stuff. And so you're doing this like crazy early hours where you get on the mountain at midnight, you tow your rig up there, you unload in the dark and you take your car out and it's freezing cold and you got to get the thing working. And then as soon as there's like a little bit of daylight, they send you. And it's very surreal, especially at the top of the mountain when you go up there and it's like, you know, barely crack the sun over the horizon. it's just awesome. You know, like the views are awesome. The terrain is killer. The cars that show up are badass because you can pretty much build whatever the hell you want and bring it up there. And so that's kind of what I like, is that it's still that old school feel where just you can bring any car you want and just figure out where you stack up, you know, like it, you can do whatever you want. And it's also kind of cool that there's so few people that do it every year. And a lot of those guys are repeats. So like, there's not a lot of new people that make it up there and get the opportunity to do it. And so to kind of get into that, you know, brotherhood or whatever, like that you meet all those guys, these legends, like the Millens and stuff up there.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. You know, I'm sitting here like all day on, you know, after the race, everybody just sits up there in the gift shop hanging out and eating donuts, or whatever, you know, so you're like sitting there with these legends and you're like, wow, you know, I'm in this little group. And that I think is pretty cool too. And then it's a little bit less now that they've started grouping all the fans together in like certain spectator areas. But the first year I did it, it was still kind of open. And so the whole way down the hill after the race, like every fan is at the side of the road giving you a high five. And, you know, that's just badass. Like you get chills. I even get chills now just talking about it. Like that kind of camaraderie between the fans and, you know, the racers is really cool. And they still do it, but now you're grouped into smaller areas of the mountain. But yeah, the whole event is just really, really cool.
What surprised you the most about like the first time you showed up that like you weren't expecting? Was it the schedule? Was it that like what was like, holy shit, I had no idea it was like this?
Well, there was a lot of holy shit I didn't know. It was like the first time showing up, you know, driving up in the rental car ahead of time, just kind of getting a feel for where everything was and like doing basics like that. You get
where not to fall off.
Yeah, where not to fall off, which is basically everywhere. But
everywhere.
You know, I'd watched a lot of video, but it certainly doesn't give you the scale of it and everything. And yeah, I don't know. I think just like going to the tech before the weekend. So like the Sunday, Monday before it all kicks off, you know, you're in a parking lot down in the city and just looking at all the cars that show up. There's just awesome builds, stuff that you would never see on a road race, you know, event, and seeing all the solutions people come up with for, you know, a short run with lots of power at elevation is kind of cool. And then just like the number of people that are so into it and so ready to like give you everything they know to help you out. You know, it's still kind of that club racing feel where it's not like in the pro paddocks, like we, you know, hold our cards close to our chest and don't really tell anybody anything, but like, it's still there very open and like, yeah, you know, you need this and this and do that. And, you know, everybody will help you out. And if you need something, they'll help you. And like, a lot of times people are having problems throughout the week and, you know, other teams are helping repair stuff during the day and like, or tune stuff. And so it's a very tight community, I think, and makes it a very fun event.
That sounds very similar to the karting stuff.
I was going
to
say,
at least that I'm involved in.
Yeah, yeah. So as someone who hasn't raced, you always, and only recently started spectating some of your kart stuff, Nick. It's always, I'm used to the stuff I've seen at Road America at VIR, where you've got, you know, closed doors, people with, you know, you literally mimed it, you know, holding iPads to their chest, like, no, don't look at this. And, you know, when I went to go see you kart at Road America a few weeks ago, it was like, wow, it's like, hey, do you have this thing I can borrow? And everyone's like, yeah, here you go. And like, you know, did you change this on your setup? And, you know, yeah, I did this. And I was like, this is weird, but it was very, from an outside perspective, very, you know, faith in humanity restoring a little bit. And it sounds like the Pikes Peak is that as well. So
yeah, very much, especially for the rookies, I think, because everybody knows that there's so much to take in your first year there that like all the veterans will kind of, you know, help you out, and they have rookie meetings and stuff. So they're like specifically trying to help those guys. But there's a lot of people that will take you under their wing without even asking and just say, all right, you need to figure this out. You need to do this. You know, they'll take you up the mountain in the rental car and say, watch for this, look for that. You know, this turn looks like that one, but you know, you'll die if you go off the end of it.
Jesus.
And so like, there's a lot of like, Dave Karapetyan is a guy from Rally Ready down in Texas that I met that first year. And was, you know, very helpful in his whole team with getting our team, you know, which was just a couple of guys, prepared for, like, when do you need to get up there? Like, how early do you need to get in line to be able to make it through and get unloaded in time? You know, just stuff that you can't read in a pamphlet ahead of time to know, you know, they're very helpful.
So I was watching your onboard. I think it was the Cayman one from 2018 mm-hmm. that you had put up on your YouTube channel, Skeen TV. There you go. There's a plug. And I'm watching this, and you had mentioned it a couple times kind of offhand, like, don't go off here, you'll die. But I'm watching this thinking, if he's an inch and a half off, like, this is going to get really bad.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of a way to equate it, and I'm sure this isn't very close at all, but I'm just trying to get into that mindset. I've heard people, when they're talking about, like, running a street course where there's no room for error because the wall is right there, they say, hey, I don't focus on where the wall is at. It's just a dead focus on hitting that apex, putting my tire, my inside front tire right here, accelerating here, up, and, like, just block the wall out. That's the only thing I can think of, is, like, block the edge of the cliff out and just focus on, like, is that how essentially you guys get up the hill?
Yeah, pretty much. You kind of have to ignore what's off the course, you know. But unlike a street course where, yeah, you hit a wall is a bad, you know, outcome, but it's not as bad as falling off a cliff. So it's not, you know, good to hit a wall on a street course, but also, like, you might have a minute and a half long lap or whatever on a street course and 10 turns or whatever, remember, but the Pikes Peak course is about the same length as the Nürburgring Nordschleife. It's like 150, 60 corners, which is about the same as Nürburgring. And so you've got this, like, really long track to memorize. And a lot of the corners look really, really similar, but end up different, you know? So you definitely have to know where you are and what's coming next to plan, you know, if you want any kind of speed up the hill. So it can't be just purely drive by sight, because there have to be some corners where you're like, all right, I'm mad at the apex on this one and it's flat through the next hill or whatever. And it may look the same as another corner that turns into a hairpin, you know? So you've got to really know where you are. And that's certain, you know, the preparation is definitely the trickiest thing to figure out, because there's not a great sim for it. And running up the rental car, you know, up the hill is only so good, you know, because you're only using half the course when you're running up in the rental car, and it's a lot different, you know, line wise. So, you know, there's not a great analog, and all throughout the practice week, you're only doing a third of the mountain at the time. So, you know, each practice day, you're doing a third at a time separately, and you never do the whole thing all at once until race day. So definitely experience, and the guys that have done it a bunch of times ends up playing dividends for, you know, an ultimate pace up the hill. But yeah, it's just a really tricky place, and you got to have a lot of respect for it and do a lot of work ahead of time to figure it out.
So, for those listening, he runs at the Nürburgring too. He's actually going there in a couple of weeks. With 150, 160 corners, whether it's Pikes Peak or the Nordschleife, like, do you actually memorize it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Like,
now
I have studying tape, looking at a track map. Like, what is that process like?
So with the Pikes Peak, like I said, there's not a great sim for it. I did play, like, a little, I think it was Colin McRae Rally or Dirt Rally or something, had a version of it, but it wasn't great. So I did some of that. But for me, it was mostly watching quality video, like guys that I knew were good. And then just taking, like, rally style notes, like three left, four right, you know, 100 yard straight, whatever, bump here, and made notes for myself in shorthand. And then I would just watch the video and kind of say to myself the shorthand notes until I could go all the way up without looking at my notes and say what was next. And so I, you know, spent, I don't know how many hours that year before I got there, just doing that over and over and over again. And then, of course, did, you know, as much as I could in person, running up the hill and in the rental car that week. But yeah, it needs a lot of prep work. And then, like, for the ring, fortunately, as a kid, I played a lot of Gran Turismo, and so I kind of knew that already.
Yeah, and, buddy.
And it's amazing how good it is. And, you know, iRacing, of course, now. But, yeah, really, Gran Turismo is what taught me the ring. And first time there, I was totally comfortable. I knew my whole way around there.
That's incredible. Tristan, we're coming up on time. You want to hit him with some, like, this mic is where, like, the real journalism starts. do you want to hit him with some rapid fire before we let him go?
The real BuzzFeed journalism.
Clickbait.
Yeah. You're going to need that drink. So we often ask some of these just rapid fire, fun questions, no relation to racing, kind of the cool down lap for you. Toilet paper, over or under?
Definitely over.
There you go, my man. Nick?
Incorrect. This one is kind of racing related. If you had to bet, who could eat more wings in a single sitting, Juan Montoya or Tony Stewart?
Oof. I'd say Tony, probably. Okay. All-American boy.
That's fair. Tristan?
This one, again, car related. But not racing related. What do you drive now? And if you had the ability to purchase any car from any time period, even if it's impossible to get now, what would you drive?
So what do I drive now? I've got a couple, nothing super fancy, but my fun car is actually my first car, which is an 86 5 Series BMW E28 body style. So kind of like the E30, but bigger, with a Chevy LS swap.
Oh, shit.
Got the 256 and a mildly built LS, and just drove it around today. It's a freaking blast. I love it. Probably never get rid of it. Knock on wood. Hopefully it'll last and survive through all the crazy traffic and stuff. But yeah, that's my fun car. I've also got like a diesel wagon 3 Series F31. If I like ultimate car, I would say would have to be a McLaren F1. I don't think I'll ever reach that, but yeah, that would be the ultimate dream car.
All right. I you are correct on that one. You've redeemed yourself. a little quick game of would you rather. Shitty car on a good road or a good car on a shitty road?
Definitely shitty car on a good road. Absolutely. You can drive it flat out. Like,
that is the same answer that we've gotten from every one of our guests who we've asked. So, popular opinion. Tristan?
I'm struggling with the rapid fire. You've got the list, don't you?
Not the whole list. I only wrote down a couple.
Okay. If you got one more, give me a second. I was actually answering the question myself in my head.
Okay. So I do actually...
my own journalism.
One's popped into my head looking at your map of VAR behind you, Mike, at one of the corners that cuts off into like one of the club circuits. So kind of a qualifying question. Is it true that one of those corners is named Bitch?
Yep.
Is that the best corner name in all of motorsports?
yeah, I can't think of a better one. And it's pretty accurate. It catches a lot of people out.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just super slow and tightens up, so people carry a lot of speed in and wash out and lose it on the exit.
All right, that's so food. Back to food related. This was something that was asked of us by the Dinner with Racers guys. Favorite chicken sandwich, if you eat your chicken sandwiches. If you do not, why?
Of course I'll eat a chicken sandwich. I guess I'd have to go with the good southern answer of a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
There you go. All right.
Dude, they just brought Chick-fil-A up to Wisconsin a couple of years ago. Lines are around the block every day.
It's crazy down here. They've got some that are like 2 and 4 lanes of drive-through. Yeah, it's nuts.
One in Olive Branch, Mississippi is 2 lanes.
Deluxe chicken sandwich with the pepper jack cheese.
There you go. He's got his order.
Yeah. There it is. That's awesome. Memorize that like his pace notes from Pike Peak.
Yeah, a little shorter.
Let's see, what other ones did we talk about? Dual question is pineapple a pizza topping?
No.
Favorite pizza topping?
That's tough. I mean, I guess you got to have like a pepperoni as a base and then you go beyond that, but you got to have that one first.
Okay. Tristan?
I think that's as good a place to stop as any. I mean, he agreed with me, so I think we can wrap it up there.
Well, awesome. Unless you have any questions for us, Mike,
Well, you told me you got DQ'd from your karting race, so I got to hear that story.
Yeah, so apparently my track width was too wide in the rear. But I've been doing some digging on this, Mike, and I've looked in four different rule books. My own series rule book, the Road America rule book, the rule book from the track that I race at if I'm not at Road America, and the WKA rule book, and not once does it even mention anything about track width. And also, I've run this same track width multiple times before and passed. So I am lining up to do an official protest to try to get my eighth place finish back.
Hey, better than nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had somebody tell me that, hey, I don't think the guy actually put the shaft all the way through the axle. Like the T handle wasn't already all the way up against your rim. So I'm like, okay, we've got people saying it was a mismeasurement, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, that sounds kind of like tech at even the upper levels.
Really?
Sometimes you go across the tech, you know, ahead of time and you're like, oh yeah, 5 mil ride height to the good. And then you come across and you're like, no, now we're 10 under. Like, I don't know. It just seems like sometimes not quite the most consistent measurements.
Weight is a big thing, obviously, in karting, right? The weight minimum. The adventure for us is the calibration on the scales.
Yeah.
For between different tracks, because I'll be, you know, our minimum weight is 380. I'll be, you know, 384 after the feature at one track. 2 weeks later, we'll go to a different one, and I'm 377. I'm like, I did not lose 7 pounds in 2 weeks. Yeah. Like, I guarantee you that. Like, so now I have to find weight just to be legal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always a fun adventure. But any other questions for us? Or let's give the folks who have listened this far, where can they find you on social media, on YouTube? Like, how can they get a hold of Mike Skeen or just see what you're up to?
Yeah, so pretty much all the social is at Mike Skeen Racing. Instagram is where I post most stuff. And then skeen.tv. Or at Mike Skeen Racing on YouTube. Got tons of onboards there from years and years and years. So you probably could not watch all of them if you tried.
Nick's gonna try now.
I'm gonna try. Challenge accepted, Mike. I'll keep you posted on my progress.
Yeah.
Well, if there's nothing else, we gotta wish you all of the best of luck as you chase down this IMSA championship. Hopefully you can cap it off with a race win or two in these last couple of weeks here, but ultimate goal is that big trophy at the end. So best of luck. We cannot thank you enough for taking an hour of your time with us in the midst of all the other things you have going on. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Awesome. And we thank you listeners as well. We cannot wait to do this for you again. Until then, take care.